Vioxx is a terrible tragedy and a profound regulatory failure. I would argue that the FDA, as currently configured, is incapable of protecting America against another Vioxx. We are virtually defenseless. It is important that this committee and the American people understand what happened with Vioxx is really a symptom of something far more dangerous to the safety of the American people. Simply put, FDA and the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research are broken.
Since November, when I appeared before the Senate Finance Committee and announced to the world that FDA was incapable of protecting America from unsafe drugs or from another Vioxx, very little has changed on the surface, and substantively nothing has changed.
We are faced with what may be the single greatest drug safety catastrophe in the history of this country. I strongly believe that this should have been, and largely could have been, avoided, but it wasn't. And over 100,000 Americans have paid dearly for this failure. In my opinion, the FDA has let the American people down.
I believe that FDA is unduly influenced by industry, and that undue influence is in part the result of industry money funding FDA operations.
There's an epidemic in the United States, one that has been missed by the mainstream media. In fact, there's no congressional hearings on it. There's no major effort to challenge it or change it. I'm talking about the epidemic of preventable diseases in the United States. Imagine this, 131 million overweight Americans, many of them toddlers and young children. We have an epidemic of diabetes, heart disease, arthritis, fibromyalgia, depression, anxiety disorders, environmental diseases. How did we get so sick? And why, after spending $2 trillion and over 700,000 physicians, over 2 million people in the health field, out of all of our hospitals and medications and medical procedures, why aren't we closer to eliminating these illnesses? I'm Gary Nall. In this original, in-depth investigative report on over-medicating Americans, we're going to be asking some hard questions about where's this money going? Who is leading our health care crisis campaign? Are we spending any energy and money and resources on preventing these conditions? You turn on television, all you see are ads for either medications if you're sick or products that can make you sick, and especially the children. How did we get here? What can we do to challenge this? That's what we're going to explore. Join me now for this special look at our crisis in healthcare in the United States.
One of the pieces that I wrote for the British Medical Journal recently was about drug company influence at the FDA. And so the front cover of the British Medical Journal had the question, who owns the FDA, the drug industry or the people? To be raising such a question in one of the world's most senior medical journals shows that there is a massive crisis of legitimacy at the FDA.
The major issue Americans confront today is the fact that the FDA acts to protect the financial interests of the pharmaceutical industry as opposed to the health of the American public.
Within the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, about 80% of the resources are geared towards the approval of new drugs, and 20% is for everything else. Drug safety is about 5%. Congress has created that structure by a PDUFA, the Prescription Drug User Fee Act, by which drug companies pay money to FDA so that FDA will review and approve its drugs. For industry, every day that a drug is held up from being marketed, in their minds, that's another $1 to $2 million of profit that they're being denied. And so the incentive is really review the drugs as quickly as possible, approve them as quickly as possible, and don't stand in the way of our making profit. And FDA cooperates with that mandate.
The regulated activities of the Food and Drug Administration are in large measure financed directly by the pharmaceutical companies.
More than 50% of the money that the FDA spends reviewing drugs comes from the pharmaceutical companies. Many people see that as an absurd conflict of interest, and indeed many are calling for an end to such user pays funding.
That destroys this arm's length relationship. This destroys the distance that ought to prevail between the Food and Drug Administration and the pharmaceutical companies.
And once that funding started coming from the drug companies, they started calling the shots. And basically they said, we're not going to continue to provide this funding unless you help us get these drugs to market. So basically the FDA got marching orders in the mid-90s, start helping bring drugs to market, do it quickly, and they basically have served those masters ever since. We've really been betrayed by the FDA, and that's the only way to put it.
Well, it's kind of weird, but the day before I had my stroke, I couldn't find home plate. You know, I was pitching batting practice to my kids, which I, you know, I do all the time, and I just could not throw a strike to save my life. Even now I have a little bit more trouble than I used to.
Well, I started taking anti-inflammatory drugs in the year 1999. I believe it was January of 2002, I switched over to Vioxx, and I was taking it probably three or four times a week for about 6 months.
Thanks.
I'll never forget it. It was a Monday. I collapsed at work. I had a stroke right then and there at work. Found myself in the hospital that afternoon. As a result of that, I couldn't walk. I couldn't speak effectively.
We have thousands of people who are being injured by products that the companies know are unsafe. I mean, that FDA knows is unsafe. FDA knew there was a problem with Vioxx. They knew there was a big problem back in mid-2000. They did nothing about it.
The left side of my body is, you know, it doesn't work right. And I was working with a piece of woodworking and the blade hit my thumb and scared to death. It's all going up for sale. Every bit of it. And I've got, this is all industrial grade stuff.
To this day, I have a sleep disorder. I have panic disorder. I have extreme fatigue, which is related due to the sleep disorder.
FDA is responsible for 140,000 heart attacks, 60,000 dead Americans. That's as many people as were killed in the Vietnam War.
I'm a family physician and, you know, had a thriving practice, basically at the peak of my professional career, a passionate practice. I did the majority of my work with kids with psychiatric and psychological disorders, and the type of job I could have done for nothing. Unfortunately, since my stroke, you know, we've had to put our house up for sale. As a result of the disability, I've been unable to work. And to tell you the truth, we can't even afford to sell the house with a real estate agent, you know, because of the commission that they obtain from it, you know. So I believe what happened to me is a direct result of Vioxx. It's the only explanation that has any merit, and the only logical, simplistic explanation that I can arrive at is that Vioxx caused this situation to occur in my life.
How did this happen? How do we end up having something that can kill 100,000 Americans? And who's responsible?
I think a lot of people think that the approval of drugs by the FDA is tantamount to the FDA guaranteeing that the drug is safe as well as effective. And the truth of the matter is, we never know that to a certainty.
People are frequently under the mistaken impression that once a drug is approved by the FDA, it's extremely safe. In fact, there are very few long-term studies done on particular drugs, and it's not at all uncommon for a drug to be removed from the marketplace because it has been shown to be unsafe.
The FDA is empowered to require drug companies to continue clinical trials of drugs even after they've been approved. And this option, the phase 4 clinical trials, they're called, is especially useful for drugs that have received expedited review through the FDA. In other words, the FDA has agreed to approve drugs faster than it otherwise would. The trouble is, phase four clinical trials aren't used nearly as often as they should be used.
What is the real relationship between the pharmaceutical industry and the FDA?
As a drug chemist, I discovered that FDA drug approval wasn't based on science. It was based on financial conflict, where 6 out of 10 scientists who have financial conflicts of interest say, yes, this drug should be approved.
There are people who go to the FDA thinking in the back of their minds, if they behave properly towards the industry, they will be rewarded with a job in the industry.
One of the most recent illuminating incidents of that revolving door policy was the presence of a man by the name of Daniel Troy, who was the chief counsel to the FDA for a period of time. And prior to his becoming chief counsel to the FDA, his law firm was very active as an advocate for the pharmaceutical industry, the tobacco industry, and other elements of our economy which are regulated by the FDA. He no longer holds that position, but while he was there, interestingly enough, he was a chief advocate for the economic entities, particularly the pharmaceutical companies, that the FDA oversaw. And of course, when he left his position as chief counsel of the FDA, he went right back to the regulated industry and probably benefited economically from the experience that he had here in Washington.
It used to be that you weren't allowed to have any financial benefits from the drug companies if you were on the advisory board or a member of the FDA or the CDC, but that's not the case anymore. 3 of the 5 people that voted to approve Vioxx were connected to the companies that were manufacturing it.
When you look at the experts who are on television commenting on a story, or on some of the physician websites that are out there that are increasingly popular, or who may be providing testimony to Congress, if you look at their backgrounds and where their money comes from, in the vast majority of cases, unfortunately, it comes from the pharmaceutical industry. And whether they declare the bias or not, they are clearly influenced by who's paying the bill.
If it is true that the drug companies are the ones that are sort of self-evaluating these drugs, of course they have an inherent desire to make these drugs, you know, pass FDA standards. Who's looking out to see if that's really happening?
When I was invited by Senator Grassley's office to testify, I was faced with this dilemma. Do I sort of lay it on the line and tell them the way it really is, or do I kind of downplay it? And there are ways of doing that. But what I concluded was is that I'm now being given the opportunity to tell the truth to the people who are in a position to actually make a difference. I can't make a difference. I can't change FDA. But Congress can. If I don't tell them the truth, then I'm now responsible, in part, for the deaths of people that happen in the future. And I'm basically a co-conspirator, if you will, with FDA and what happened with Vioxx, because all these, you know, tens of thousands of people were injured or killed because FDA's disregard for safety. And if I kept quiet about that, now I'm part of the problem. I'm one of them. And my conscience tells me, well, you know what you have to do, you know what the truth is, and now are you going to speak it or aren't you?
I started getting arthritis in my hands because I did physical labor on my job, and they put me on Vioxx, and it began as a low dosage. I eventually ended up on the 75 milligrams, and I was on that for 6 or 7 months, and then I started feeling like I couldn't balance right. You know, it was like I was dizzy and I couldn't balance. So I called my doctor, and she said to go to the emergency room, and they admitted me and said I'd had a mild stroke. I've since that time had my whole life turned upside down. I was employed by General Motors in the auto industry, and General Motors talked to my doctor, and my doctor sent me to a rehabilitation specialist, and then they sent me a letter, and they said, it's not safe to have you work anymore. We're retiring you. And I was like, I don't want to retire. I get this letter 3 weeks later from Social Security, and they said, your employer's contacted us, and you're too sick to work, and we're going to retire you, and this is when your money starts. And I started calling people. I said, don't take my job. Don't do this. I'm 56. And even with all of that happening, my health was getting worse and worse. And at one point, I got to where I couldn't even stand up straight. And I dragged my leg, and my right hand use is kind of limited because it's kind of stiff and dragging.
Back in early 2004, the SSRI antidepressants and suicidal behavior was a big safety issue. FDA had suppressed a report written by a colleague of mine in drug safety and had prevented him from presenting this information at an advisory committee meeting. That information got leaked to the media, and it embarrassed FDA because now FDA was caught suppressing information, suppressing its own scientists on a very important public health issue involving children.
The doctor told us that he thought the drug Prozac would help Jacob, that it's a common prescribed drug used in teenagers now, that he thought it would help him with his moods and just make him feel happier. So he was put on Prozac that afternoon, 10 milligrams. The morning of my son's death, we had talked that morning. He did not want to go to school that day, and he just said that he would go the next day. They were getting out for Christmas holidays. I left for work, and a few hours later, I began to call home because with him being at home by himself, I was concerned, so I did not get an answer, and I continued to call for a couple of hours. Then I left. And it took me 30 minutes to get home, and I found my son hanging in our attic. My husband and I attended a FDA hearing in Washington about the side effects that can happen with these drugs. And unfortunately, the first hearing, there were 65 parents there. Their children had died while on antidepressants. Some of them were on the drug a matter of days before they committed suicide.
After being on Prozac for 21 days, my wife shot and killed both of these two boys right here. She turned the gun to herself and shot herself twice. Now she's in jail for murder.
Since I've been on Prozac, I've experienced the following adverse reactions. A drug-induced insanity that has caused several self-destructive outbursts. There was an extended period of anger, rage, and hostility, and it turned into terrible feelings that suicide was the only answer.
This is hard for me because I tried to commit suicide in front of my five children. I didn't know what I was doing. I don't remember exactly what happened. All I know is that my husband took the gun away from me and my children was looking from the other room. What would have happened if these children had seen their mother commit suicide?
My sister did commit suicide in front of Lindsay. Another woman spoke of hollow point bullets. That's what my sister used to do it.
Prior to my Senate testimony, in mid-November of 2004, there was an orchestrated campaign by senior-level FDA managers to intimidate me so that I would not testify before Congress. Our acting Senate director contacted the editor of The Lancet, a prestigious medical journal in the United Kingdom, and intimated to the editor that I had committed scientific misconduct, or that I may have committed scientific misconduct, and that they shouldn't publish a paper that I had written showing that Vioxx increases the risks of heart attack. The second was that other high-level FDA officials contacted Senator Grassley's office and attempted to get Senator Grassley and his staff to not support me, to not believe me, and to not call me as a witness.
The problem for government scientists and federal employees in general is they don't have viable legal rights. There's a Whistleblower Protection Act, which is the strongest free speech law in history on paper. But in reality, it's been a trap, a vehicle to rubber stamp whatever harassment the bureaucracy wants to impose on a whistleblower.
Senior FDA officials contacted Tom Devine, my attorney at the Government Accountability Project, and attempted to convince him that he should not represent me because I was a bully, a demagogue, that I was guilty of scientific misconduct, that I was just a terrible person, I couldn't be trusted. And these people were posing as whistleblowers themselves. But it turns out that they were senior FDA officials. Some of them are in my supervisory chain, who were involved in a coordinated attempt to discredit me and to smear my name and to prevent me from giving testimony. The week before I testified, the acting commissioner of FDA invited me to his office and offered me a job in the commissioner's office to oversee the revitalization of drug safety for FDA. I mean, obviously, he had been tipped off by people on the Senate Finance Committee who were sympathetic to FDA's status quo that I was going to be called as a witness. And so to preempt that, he's offering me this job, which basically would have been exile to, you know, a fancy title with no real ability to have an impact.
Secrecy enforced by repression in scientific agencies is a severe threat to public health and safety because it sustains the approval of life-threatening drugs when those decisions couldn't be defended if they were made in the light of day.